sound. Logic podcast. Two guys with no credentials. Reviewing
Rolling Stone 500 greatest album. The podcast.
Hi, everyone. We're so glad that you found the Sound Logic podcast, whether this is your 110th episode with us or your very first. We're happy today to be discussing album number 110, which is Court and Spark by Joni Mitchell.
Ben, help me. I think I'm falling in love again. I just love Joni Mitchell's music. So this is so exciting. There are so many albums we do that are new to us, or an artist we might know but not be familiar with the album, or an artist and genre that we're not really into. But it's always exciting to do something here on this list that's already familiar to us. And I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but I'm excited.
Because this project was the reason the two of us really got to know Joni Mitchell too.
I mean, yes, it is.
We would have known Joni and known some of her songs, but we would neither one of us would probably have said we were really big fans of particular albums, and Blue connected and touched us so deeply that we started to dig into the rest of her catalog. It's really because of this project that we arrive at a familiar album, but not one that would have been familiar to me, at least, before we started this lengthy endeavor.
No, me neither. Okay, I think we should just get into the details, because I'm gonna gonna just start gushing, and there's time for that later in our format here.
That's right.
Details first. Okay, so Court and Spark was released January 17, 1974, and this was her sixth studio album. A little bit of context: Blue was her fourth album, was a massive critical success. It's now number three on the Rolling Stone list. And this is two albums and maybe 3 years later. So this is her sixth album. She wrote all the songs except for Twisted, written by Annie Ross and Wardell Gray. For any of our jazz fans, you might know Annie Ross from the vocal group Lambert, Hendricks and Ross, LHR. It was a vocalese group in the 50s and 60s. She wrote Twisted based on a saxophone solo by Wardell Gray that had been written in 49. She wrote it in 52. And then Joni here is covering it, and other people have covered it too. Sorry, nerding out on the jazz a bit there, but you guys are used to that. Charted number 14 in the UK, number two in the US, and of course number one here in Canada, which is where Joni's from.
It doesn't today. Always happen, right? Sometimes we
no, you're right, it doesn't.
We have these Canadian artists that go number one elsewhere but not in Canada.
And often some of the ones that go number one in Canada aren't international artists, so they're not even on the list. Certified two times platinum in the US, so that's 2 million. Apparently that's the highest of her career.
I was so surprised about that this album, and not Blue, is the one with the most commercial success. I don't know. I think Blue is one I was familiar with before even listening to it. This is one, sadly, I don't even think I would have been able to hear Court and Spark and know, oh, that's a Joni Mitchell album. So to know that it's her most successful is interesting, and I'm sure Joni Mitchell's true fans would roll their eyes at comments like that and say, of course it is, Ben. But
yeah. well I would have thought of something like I think it's her second or third album, Ladies of the Canyon, or Women of the Canyon. Mm-hmm. I always forget the name of that one. It's got like Big Yellow Taxi and stuff like that. Was a huge hit, and that may be one of the ones that launched her career, but apparently it's this. And I've three singles from the album: Raised on Robbery, Help Me, and Free Man in Paris. And those are songs that I did know before listening to this album. Same as you, I might not have known Court and Spark, but I knew some of the songs. And I've also read that Help Me is apparently, and again, I don't know exactly how they determine this, but apparently Help Me is her most successful single.
Amazing.
again, I would have said like Big Yellow Taxi, because that I think is just such a huge radio hit that I've heard for years since I was a little kid. But anyways, yeah. So that's the album. A couple notes on the album itself. It was an immediate commercial and critical success, and is still her most successful album, whatever that means. The album was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 2004. So I said that Blue came out in 71, and For the Roses came out in 72, and she didn't release a new album in 73. It's the first year she hadn't released an album since she started releasing albums. 67, 68, 69, 70, like she did one every year. Or might have been 68, actually, she started. And For the Roses did well. It was had critical and commercial success. She wanted to spend the whole next year writing and recording a new album that revealed her growing interest in new sounds, particularly jazz. And this is the first album that I would say, and I think most authors would say, that this is the first album where you start hearing more jazz elements in her music. You don't really hear it in Blue. I'm not familiar with For the Roses. You hear it in a few songs here, and of course the one cover she does is a jazz cover. But you hear it she's in other things.
She's got an article on her website, on the page for Court and Spark, an article written by John Dale from just a few years ago in 2017. He talks about how the jump from 1972's For the Roses to Court and Spark, nothing short of startling. So I'm assuming for her real hardcore fans, hearing the pivot that she makes on this album, you know, we can look back at it now and be like, oh, yeah, we can already see she's pivoting into the jazz and more experimental. But, you know, for a person who'd had quite a lot of success on the radio, I'm sure that some of this stuff is a little bit more challenging than what had come before.
Yeah, absolutely. And we hear, and I'll talk about this a bit more later, but we hear also the evolution of Joni Mitchell, and she's an artist who changed many times in terms of her image and her music and her themes and all this stuff. Very much you can see that and hear that in her music. This album has a lot of, and this is one of my favorite things on listening to albums and buying albums and opening up the liner notes, and I did it with CDs too. There's lots of special guests on this album. Robbie Robertson of the band, I'll talk a little bit more about that a little later. David Crosby and Graham Nash, who I think she was romantically linked with, both of them at some point, not the same time. And also a famous comedy duo, Cheech and Chong. Cheech Marin and Tommy Chong appear on Twisted. I'll talk about that a bit too. But lots of special, and there's other guests as well. Those are probably the most familiar to me. There's some other as well. Joni playing, of course, acoustic guitar and piano. On Blue, we had James Taylor and I think some other people, but she was also somewhat involved with him at that time. And that ended, I think, between recording and releasing the album. So maybe not. Maybe that's why he's not here this time.
Yeah. yeah.
And any other notes on the album before we move on, Ben? Any other historical notes?
Well, I think some of the people featured here probably led into where she goes from here. She starts touring with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young.
Oh, cool.
I think that's who joined her for the tour of this album.
And, okay.
I like that note. I can't fathom what it must have been like to go see those two acts on the same bill. But would have been pretty special. I think her backing band is a lot of people have suspected that's the reason for her pivot into becoming a little bit more jazzy and experimental, is having that group of artists influence her on the road suddenly opens a new kind of avenue of possibility of where she can take her sound and her songs.
There's some names that I am familiar with, and maybe some of you will be. Joe Sample on electric piano and clavinet. I know we've read his name at some point. I think of a well-known session musician. I don't know if he was a solo musician. Jose Feliciano plays electric guitar. Free Man in Paris. I know that name. I don't recognize any of the other names just in reading them, but lots of other people involved. So
yeah,
and I think well-known session musicians. The other thing I might add is she was nominated for in 1975 for the Album of the Year, for the song "Help Me," for record nominated for Record of the Year and Best Female Pop Vocal Performance, and she won the Grammy for Best Arrangement Accompanying Vocalist for "Down to You," the song "Down to You." So again, lots of critical acclaim for yeah, sure.
That's for sure.
You want to move to the cover art?
Sure.
So this is again, you know, look, pause and look it up so you can see it. This is, I have a copy of this, and it's
same.
You have this too?
Yeah, we should talk about I know one thing that you enjoy is the signs of a past life on an album cover from long ago. So we'll talk about that once we get through.
Oh, hold on. Let me go get mine.
Okay.
I want to go get mine. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back.
All right.
Okay. So the album cover, it almost looks like craft colored paper, like the word I want to use is manila, like a manila folder.
Yes.
It's almost
yes.
that color. And in the center is a painting that Joni painted, and it's I would say it's watercolor or something mm-hmm. like that.
Maybe pen and ink first, and then watercolor on top.
Yeah, and it looks almost like she did it on some kind of a yellowed paper. Mm-hmm. And she calls it "The Mountain Loves the Sea." She said she did it on her land in Vancouver, and it was done in a moment of whimsy. It's a metaphor for the way the waves met up with the mountain and the way they embrace one another. And you see almost what looks like a hug on it. It's very simple. It's got her signature there. And apparently the original is now owned by Rosie O'Donnell, a celebrity. So that's
fun little
kind of
crossover there. Yeah.
There's the, I don't know if you call it embossed, but mm-hmm. the writing, so above this, that the picture's in the center, and above and below, above it says Courtney Spark in cursive, and below Joni Mitchell, and there's a border, but that is like raised.
Mm-hmm.
You could
at least on the vinyl, I'm assuming they did something else for the CD.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, any for, of the, and even
later her cassette.
Even a lot of, we've talked about this, Ben, a lot of vinyl re-releases where, you know, like, for example, I think they do it to the nines now on vinyl, but the Velvet Underground and Nico with that banana sticker.
Yeah.
Right? If you would have got a reprint of that in maybe the late, in the 70s, they just printed that, right?
Like, right, yeah.
Same with sometimes this, you know, they'll do a reprint and not do the fancy thing. Well, they'll just print the image. And I don't know if that was the case with this, but a lot of times that is what happens.
Yep. It looks like the CD has red lettering instead of it being embossed or raised.
Interesting.
You know, it's flat in the jewel case. It's just, it's red. I don't know. I don't like it as much. It's a little bit more jarring.
Yeah.
That stand out in that way.
One thing I like about this packaging is, and I've seen this in some of Joni's stuff, not all of it, but some of the other stuff. It's very simple.
Yeah.
The back cover is just plain. It's just the same mm-hmm. color. There's nothing there. At the bottom, in very small print, the songs on side one, side two, and then all the personnel.
Mm-hmm.
and then the copyright at the bottom.
It is. It's simple, and yet there are these subtleties, like the fact that she has signed the painting in the middle of the front cover. You know, it is clearly a painting, and they've not cropped that signature out. They've kept that in there. And in fact, then her name is her signature, I think. The embossed under the painting is just an embossed signature, essentially. So there's these interesting, like, kind of very artistic, specific elements to this, even though it could be seen. And I think even when I first picked it up, I thought, whoa, that's very tan, like a plate of mashed potatoes. Like, there's nothing happening here. And yet, the more I look at it, the more I think, like, oh, I missed that there. And, well, that's interesting. The cloud in the watercolor, the cloud in the sky, I thought that I had just a stain on my cover. It's a darker shade of tan. And there are other darker shades of tan on this cover that have shown its wear and its signs of use. But that I now see is intentional and part of the art.
Oh, that's cool. Let me say one thing first. You open it up, and again, there's no, some of them have like not a pages but a gatefold you can open up, and there's extra stuff or maybe some extra pictures or whatever. This is just all the songs and lyrics, and then a black and white, almost looks like a, you know, like a print, like a, what do you call that, like a vinyl rolling print, black and white of her face. I see a bit more age on Joni. I mean, I know it has been a few years since kind of the 69, 70 days, but you just see her aging. And I always felt that when I saw pictures of her in the late 70s, it looks like she had aged a lot. And I think she might even say she had. I don't really like to talk about people's appearances.
She certainly has been candid about struggling with substance abuse, and
yeah,
that can age a person pretty quickly.
Of course,
I
notice, even though it's black and white and kind of washed out, you can see she's got like a round earring, maybe a pearl earring. And I think it's kind of a classy photo. But again, very simple. Yeah. And I just looked, sometimes there's something maybe in, like there's just the back cover just is double-sided, so that's where the record goes. And I just looked in, and in here is a little sticker.
Hmm.
You know what? No, this isn't a sticker. This is, well, it is. This is, somebody has cut, I just found this now. Somebody has cut off the sticker that was on the plastic wrap.
Oh.
And it's, again, it's her, it's the same thing. Oh, I'm holding it right over her name on the cover. And it's her signature.
Huh.
It's on the cover. And it's, but it's more of a brown. It almost looked like it's done in marker. And it's got, the number there is the registered number of the album. That would, that would be 7E-1001. That would be the album number, the catalog number. So, that's cool.
Yeah.
I wonder if people did that, little like promo stickers, if that was a thing that people did, they cut them off and then kept them. But yeah, I found it in here. The other thing I noticed, Ben, most of the records I have, when I look at the back, they're printed. Mine were pressed and printed in Canada.
Yep.
Most of the ones I have, because I'm buying them in Canadian record stores, used records mostly, and most of them are printed in Canada. There were a lot of, I've talked to people in this area. There were a lot of record companies. And when I say record companies, I mean companies that produced vinyl.
Stamped it.
In Scarborough. There were a lot in Scarborough, which is just north of Toronto. I lived there for a while. It's now part of, it was a borough, but it's now part of the city of Toronto. But I've talked to people who, there was lots down there. So, but this one I have printed in the USA. Is yours New York?
Asylum Records, yep.
And a lot of mine have the address of where it went in Canada, but this one obviously made its way across the border at some point. And I know just before we started talking, Ben, you said you like the, I've already talked it with somebody cutting this sticker out. You like to talk about the signs of a past life.
Yeah.
I've had things on, from the thrift store, you know, with people who have drawn on the front, or I've had ones where people circle their favorite songs or put their name and address on the back. I've seen that phone number. Mm-hmm. I've seen that a few times. This, all I have on the back, in very neat printing, block capitals, it says Marson, M-A-R-S-O-N. That's it. I don't know. Do you have something on yours?
Yeah. Well, my copy must have come from someone's library or really well cataloged collection, because it has multiple stickers. One quite large one, almost like index card size, that has been torn off. Was placed at the end of Joni Mitchell, so I have no idea what it said. One in the upper left-hand corner that is only half torn off, it's something IT number 3, and then just below that, a smaller 2039 record number. Almost like it looks almost like a price tag, but it's not. It's someone has printed it off a dot matrix printer and just slapped it on there. But in addition to signs of it being cataloged somewhere, at some point some listener has gone through and written the key of each song so they can play it with their guitar above each track. So looks like mostly an E, but I don't know, maybe capoed at different spots, because they have little numbers noted above some of them as well. C's in a couple of situations. So yeah, there's some interesting love shown to this album. It's in, the record is actually in fantastic shape, and the cover is held up pretty well if it was a library copy. But it still does have those signs of another life, which is not too surprising, given that this is now, a 50-year-old album here that we are talking about.
Yeah. I love that stuff. It gives such character. I know it's not the music itself, but it's the package. That's part of it. I still can't believe that I didn't notice that sticker in there. That's neat.
That's really cool.
What I've done with some of the new albums I bought is I don't even take the plastic off it. I just slit.
Yeah.
Unless it's one that is a gatefold, I just slit just so I can pull the...
Keep the stickers.
I keep everything on there, but I guess that's one way to keep it. Very, very cool. And I love how many of Joni's albums have her artwork on it.
Yeah.
Such a personal touch. Really cool. Okay, ready to talk about songs? Music?
Yeah, I think so. Another three-part, four-hour episode.
No, we'll be okay. How do I want to start? I don't know. There's so many different avenues. Okay, it starts with the title track, Court and Spark, and I want to share something before we start. The first time I heard this song was not Joni Mitchell, it was Herbie Hancock.
Oh.
And in 2007, Herbie Hancock, who's a jazz piano player, pianist, released an album called River, The Joni Letters, and all the songs on the album, except for one, which I believe was his kind of tribute to Joni. He wrote a song kind of inspired by her. They were all Joni songs. He had all sorts of special guests, including, I think, Tea Leaf Prophecy has Joni on it. But I think the opening track is Court and Spark on that album too, featuring the vocal talents of one Nora Jones. And of course, Wayne Shorter's on the album, Corrine Bailey Ray, Tina Turner sings one of the songs. Like, it's a really cool album. It won Album of the Year at the Grammys. He did very well with it. Kind of brought him back into the zeitgeist of popular music. So that was actually my first introduction to this song. So when I put the album on, I was like, ooh, I already know this. I know another version. And that was when I heard that, I was just starting to learn about Joni Mitchell outside of Big Yellow Taxi, you know, which is probably all I knew of her for a long time and kind of knew who she was. I'd never really gotten into her music. I think that by the time you and I started listening to music, Ben, in the 90s, I don't think she was really in the zeitgeist of popular music at that time. I think it's now more
your
recently.
Spouse would beg to differ. Wasn't she pretty captivated in high school? I mean, yeah, maybe it wasn't something that you had to be introduced to it by someone who was older, maybe if you were a teenager in the 90s, or your parents had to have listened to it or something for you to have it in front of you.
Yeah, I think, and I think that context was like an all-girls kind of activist-y, feminist type group that were just really focusing on...
They had some
on,
pillars on of the, artists that they needed
to hold contributions from you know, incredible women and Canadian women. So I think those instances were I think the group of musicians that was really influenced by her had kind of also slowed down. And then I think it's now more in the last 10, 20 years that we're getting another wave of artists who are being influenced by her heavily, like Taylor Swift and Brandi Carlile and all these other people and Joni herself. And I don't want to spend too much time, but it's so interesting that since the last time we talked about her, she's really back in the forefront, you know, in the last few years. A relationship with Brandi Carlile as friends, she's gotten her doing performances. Yeah. She recorded a live album at I guess Newport last year, and it won the Grammy for best live performance. So she's back. Yeah. she's you know, she's 80 and she's somewhat frail, but boy, what a big smile. Anytime you see her in public, she's just got the biggest smile on her face. And there's a time that she was really not in the public eye at all. And
had lost her voice, right?
Physically or mentally.
Yeah.
She did. She literally lost her voice for a while and got it back. And it sounds a little different than it did. But so we're even talking about her in a different context now in terms of what she's doing right now than when we talked about her a few years ago for Blue. How did we start on this?
What songs are drawing you?
and just kind of like the, you know, that I think even at that time that Herbie Hancock album came out, Joni Mitchell was still, for me, a little obscure in terms of what I was listening to. And I didn't do a deep dive at that time. I loved all the songs. Though, wow, these Joni Mitchell songs are really great. I haven't heard these before. You know, it's cool to hear other people do them. But now I'm really into it, and it's really, really, really cool. I own it. I got it, I think, at that time, but didn't deep dive. So that's Courtney Spark. I want to talk just really quickly about, we talked about some guests. So you got Courtney Spark, then Help Me, which is a big hit. And then the other, one of the other singles, Free Man in Paris, that features Graham Nash and David Crosby. At least a couple of songs on Blue are about her relationship with Graham Nash. So it's cool that she still has friendships with them at this time. And then Raised on Robbery features guitar from Robbie Robertson. And Ben, you and I have watched The Last Waltz together, and I know a lot of people watched it, you know, the last concert by the band in 76, I think, 76 or 77. Yeah. I think the movie came out in 78, but it was earlier. And I remember watching that and thinking, all the different artists thinking, wow, they just know so many people, you know? And then through listening to Tyrell Listen's podcast, The Band of History, and in the time in the 70s leading up to that, almost all of the people on that at that concert were people that they did projects with in the last 5 years. And so we see, you know, Joni, it's not just that they were connected, that Joni was at that concert, but she had done, or Robbie Robertson was on one of her albums. And I think Pajira, which she does I think on the actual movie. Now, the movie doesn't capture all the songs that were played that night, of course. And you can go and buy, or at least used to be able to buy, you know, 4-disc sets of the whole concert. But one of the one song is from Hejira, which I think was 76 or something.
Coyote, like that.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember if any of the guys from the band contribute to that album. They might have, but I can't remember. But certainly Robbie Robertson here. So that's another connection. And then I'm not sure the connection with Cheech and Chong, but they they provide some ad-lib vocalizations and some words on Twisted, the Annie Ross song, at the end of the album. So, yeah, that's some of the explanation for some of the guest appearances here. Do you want to talk about our favorites now, since we're just going to start gushing on songs? Like, start with our favorites and work
from there. Sure. Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay, so if you're new, we pick two songs from each album. We review and we put it on a playlist called SoundLogic Favorites on Spotify. So I'm going to really struggle picking a favorite here. Do you have a favorite, Ben? Is there one right off the top?
Well, I can talk through maybe a little bit of what jumps out at me, me first.
Yeah.
The track that you already mentioned, Free Man in Paris, is written about her friend David Geffen, who was a prominent songwriter.
Okay.
And the lyric, "Stoking the star maker machinery behind the popular song," that line just always jumped out at me. Like, whoa, what an interesting and subtle jab at the industry to be creating a pop song that's singing about the pressures to be creating a pop song, and to still make it sound enjoyable and something that people will connect to without it, you know, getting into Weird Al territory of that level of parody. I don't know. We've talked many times that we're not necessarily lyrics first people, but that jumped out at me. And maybe another thing that jumped out at me is the vibe of Help Me, maybe not even the vibe, but the melodic structure of Help Me back to back with Free Man in Paris feel like they are partner songs in a way that I can't quite put my finger on it. I don't know what it is.
Totally agree. I totally agree. I think they are paired up.
Is it the sort of melancholy chord changes, or I don't even know what it is or why I feel that way, but I often will confuse them when the first few lines of the music come in for the other one when I'm listening, and I don't know why it is. Almost feels like a part two when you get to Free Man in Paris to what you just heard with Help Me. But that's a long and rambly way to get to, I think Help Me would be my choice for my favorite track on this album. I like the way Courtney Spark sets the table and draws me in, but Help Me, I think, has enough of the Joni Mitchell on Blue that it feels comfortable, but it's where you can start to feel her playing with pushing beyond what a traditional song of hers would have sounded like into something in a little bit of a different space. And
well said. That's, I have often thought about Help Me and Free Man in Paris in that way as a couple, but I've also found it hard to articulate. Yeah. I think they just, Help Me has such a cool groove when the drums come in. Mm-hmm. And it's got that kind of early 70s, you know, like, I wouldn't say yacht rock, but almost getting in that territory of kind of that.
Well, the piano almost sounds like it's a keyboard of some kind, a little bit more.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Organy, I guess, maybe. Yeah.
For Free Man in Paris, you know, that, interesting choices and arrangement with the flute, starting with the flute. And then the saxophone, you know, with the saxophone there is really, really cool.
And maybe an echo from Help Me.
Oh, yeah, that's Help Me with the saxophone. But just great stuff there. Like, really great arrangements and instrumentation. Excellent songwriting, you know, as always. Corton Spark, when it opens with the piano, it reminds me of the title track from Blue.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering if in the title track here, if there's kind of an echo. I mean, I know we're two albums removed from Blue, but almost like... we'll start you with something a little familiar, and then we'll ease you into, I love the, I don't know if it's like a pedal, like a lap steel or pedal steel, in Corton Spark, you know, that kind of thing happening, as it goes from the chorus to the verse, just beautiful, I really like her with some of her songs in her first few albums, very poetic and fantastical almost, and light and airy, optimistic songs about love. When you get to Blue, we start to get into some darker territory, some heavier emotions, more complex sharing of feelings, and as we've mentioned many times, of Kris Kristofferson saying, "Joni, like, save something for yourself. Don't put everything on. Like, come on. Like, this is just, you're bleeding yourself dry here." You see that continuing, I think, in her career, her being very vulnerable and transparent. What I hear on this album, and I really hear it on people's parties when she is doing all the harmonies, I hear this change in her vocal quality. I don't know if it's that just age or from smoking or who knows, but I really hear her leaning into some of the deeper part of her register. She's an incredible, I don't know if she would have said, you know, I'm a soprano, I'm a mezzo soprano, I'm an alto back then. I would have said she's a soprano. But she's showing that she has range on the lower end too here, and I really like that. And you hear that more in Hegira, which comes a few years after this. And I like that People's Parties as well for that. Side two has a little more interesting stuff on it in terms of just going in different directions.
I don't like it as much, and I'm curious if listening to it on vinyl has shaped that. I'm flipping it over
it
to these songs that are a little bit more disjointed and kind of jokey. Like, I don't know really what she's going for with the closing track with Twisted. Even Raised on Robbery has some quirky to it that I think, like, this doesn't quite fit with the rest of... Well, with how I feel after finishing side one. It's not to say that it's... it's just different, and it'd be interesting. I don't know if this is out there, probably is, but hearing her talk specifically about how this album was put together would be a fascinating journey, because it is her effort to be something a bit more than what she has been in the past, and it'd be fascinating to hear, like, some of these choices that she made.
I'm glad you beat up on Raised on Robbery like too much, because I think that's going to be my choice.
But I was going to say,
I think
we have this Spotify playlist, but we can't add anything from this album because Joni continues to hold out her music from that platform. So, is she really?
Someone told me the other day she's back on.
Before we go any further, I better make sure that... I'm not wrong about that.
Yes, the other day I think it was my daughter, someone said she's back on, so why don't you just take a minute to verify that for us?
Oh, she is back.
And I'll talk.
Okay.
So we can add that. We can add that. We'll have, maybe have to add stuff from Blue back on. I think side one,
yeah,
to me is a little more radio friendly, and just a little catchier. And side two, it's a little deeper. Now, I really like "Raised on Robbery." I like how it starts with the clavinet. It's got that kind of, it's blues based, but it's got that rock and like that very traditional,
yeah,
rock and roll sense that. That's what rock and roll was. You know, that's very early, like almost Elvis Presley rock and roll. So it's got that feel here. And it's just an interesting thing. And I remember when we listened to Blue and listened to the song Case of You. And she mentioned, you know, I drew a map of Canada, and we both of us just kind of gushed. And I like the reference to, you know, Little yeah. Money Riding yeah. on the Maple Leafs, you know, kind of. And this one, yeah. too, is kind of, you know, we're Toronto people. So that's always kind of fun when I hear that. So I think that would be my choice. Help Me probably would have been my first choice. You picked that. So I'll go with Race on Robbery. But I love Court and Spark. I love Free Man in Paris. And to me, Twisted is like, I agree with you, Ben. And I thought this even when I heard it, I like it because I like that stuff.
Yeah.
But it is an interesting choice here, and it is out of place. And I see Joni, she's experimenting with a new style. I almost see it as like,
yeah.
Hey, I just want to do that. I just want to do this. You know, I like here's, Hey, can we put this on? This is totally different. You know, I don't know what happened. I'm not saying that, but like, it almost feels like that. Like we're like, okay, well, you're Joni Mitchell, so we'll do it, but are you sure? You know, like, yeah, but, it's fun. Twisted Indeed. Is fun. I like the whole album. It is one of those albums where I feel like the hits, the good songs are so good. Like they are, like Blue, I feel like it's every song I feel like almost every song is amazing, and I like them almost equally. Like it's just this one, I feel like there are some songs I like a lot more than other songs, and that can be challenging on an album sometimes. But the songs I like on this album, I do really like. It's very, very good. But I find too, like with records sometimes, Ben, you put it on and then you go do something, and like I might be in another room or part of the house or just doing something else with my hands, and then side one ends and I don't flip to side two, and then before I know it I'm just doing something else and I never get to side two, and I wonder if that contributes a little bit to not being as familiar with the tracks on the second side.
It does. Well, I was even thinking about it. My our oldest daughter Annika, who was on our review of Taylor Swift's Red, just got her first vinyl album. She has a copy of Taylor Swift's Lover now, but it is to fit that music on there. It is two LPs, four sides. So, you know, it's like three tracks three tracks flip, or not only flip, but take out the other disc. And I don't see her putting that on the turntable too often. She is far more likely to just click it on Spotify. And I think we consume music a little differently. Yeah. I'm glad that she listens to albums. It makes me happy. But there is something different about our relationship with music when there's that physical motion of flipping it over, and you're right. You get started with something and something else comes up and you never return to the second half of the album when it's not just playing in the background. So it's interesting to consider the way we listen to something perhaps affecting how we hear it.
I think many, if not most, people in the Western world can have some sort of device, whether it's a phone or tablet, and have wireless headphones and access to some sort of streaming, whether it's YouTube or Spotify. So I mean, it wouldn't be uncommon for five people in a house to be streaming five different things at once. So the way that we do, you know, it used to be there was a stereo in the house. Like maybe a teen who
that's
got
right,
a part-time
yeah.
mm-hmm. job might get their own stereo. And I think growing up,
yeah.
we started to get into things like Walkmans and Discmans and boom boxes. So, you know, maybe every kid would have
but a little
one,
but bit
still,
more
you're not gonna be blasting that all the time.
One
maybe
stereo,
headphones,
but nothing like today.
A little yeah, bit, but yeah. absolutely. But now, no, not like today at all. And like you still had yeah. to physically own that yeah. music. Whereas now you don't. You don't need to. I'm so sorry for so if I don't know Ben's really good at editing, but if some of my yawning is in, I do apologize. I don't know what it is, but you know, take it or leave it, right? Yeah, you know, just yeah, that vinyl thing it's interesting, you know, it's because I think if unless you're like actively listening to the album, you're with some people just to listen to it or by yourself, you know, I don't always get to flipping it right away. And like I said, sometimes
yeah, that's right.
I'm off to another thing, you know? I'm wondering if sometimes contributes to, no, I think it happens even on streaming. You know, we've talked about it where like, well, every time I come down, I want to start from the top. I sit down and listen to it and I get to maybe, you know, six or seven. So I'm not as familiar with 10, 11, 12. And I know, you know, I yeah. both said yeah. sometimes that's we'll right. sit down and we'll start at 8 because we're like never sitting down long enough to get there. Right. So yeah. Interesting.
Well, we better move there. Into some of our concluding thoughts or, we're never going to end this,
yeah.
this conversation.
I think so. What has aged on this, Ben? What's
I,
aged
I maybe
well, what
wouldn't
hasn't?
Have said this until we started digging a little deeper into some of the tracks, but some of the instrumentation, you get a bit of that yacht rock sound, the choice to go with,
right.
with an organ sound
yep,
instead of just
sort of
straight up piano a time or two. And there's something that's got kind of a 70s effervescence or haze to it. Maybe it's the jazz influence starting to come in and the step away from the maybe more traditional pop music that she had been making, but you do hear something that does seem to indicate where it's coming from. Joni Mitchell might be a little bit like, you know, just a couple of reviews ago when we were talking about Fiona Apple, a bit outside of even her peers when she was in the peak of making music. And so maybe a little hard to categorize in that way. So yeah, like where she probably was played on rock radio, but not necessarily a rock artist. She probably was played on pop radio, but she's not necessarily a traditional, pop artist either. So yeah, I think the uniqueness of who Joni is probably makes her more timeless, even when her album has some instrumentation qualities that place it in another era.
Yeah, interesting comments. I do agree with some of that.
Mm.
I think like the flute on Free Man in Paris and even the groove in like Help Me, yeah, it's very early 70s. So I think it's dated. I think it still sounds good, but it's dated. I think the songwriting itself is so good that it translates well, and it translates to people, you know, doing this music and doing it well. I think, you know, adding a very almost jazz golden, not golden era, but, you know, jazz.
Yeah.
I guess almost
yeah.
getting into the cool era of jazz in the 50s and into the 60s. I think adding a track like that was even outside of the box at the time. And then today, I think a lot of people would listen to that and maybe not know what to do with it. Because like I like it because I like that music. But I think if you're not into it, you might be going, well, I'm listening to Joni because I'm into folk rock and I'm not really into that. So I think in summary, yeah, I'm with you. Arrangements, instrumentation, and then, you know, that kind of out of the box jazz stuff. I think that are the three things that would stick. But other than that, you know, her vocal is great, songwriting is great. Even some of the guitar playing, the clavinet. We don't hear clavinet as much anymore. You know, Stevie Wonder used it a lot, but we don't really hear that much anymore. Okay, so this is number 110. And I'll just make a quick comment on that. It's only dropped. No, it's gone up three spots from the other versions of this list. So it stayed about the same. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. We'll get to, you know, the, it seems like at least increasing, appreciation for Joni Mitchell on, this most recent iteration of the list. So, you know, I'm a little surprised that it has stayed steady because, Blue shot from 30 all the way up to 3. And, there are a couple of new albums that hadn't been on this list that suddenly she's being recognized for. Know that it is her most commercially successful album, I'm a bit surprised that it is hanging out here at 110 and not a little bit higher. I wonder if, despite its commercial success, if the quirkiness of that second half of the album or even just the pivot from the earlier Joni Mitchell sound to where the trajectory she's embarking on in this album is enough for people to scratch their heads a little bit. If it was a little bit poppier, it would be a little bit higher. I don't know. I'm that's pure speculation. And it, you know, if that were the case, then maybe some of her earlier albums should be on this list and not just Blue alone. The other two that have been added both come after this, so they're maybe even more jazzy or more experimental. So I don't know. I'm not sure what to make of this placement here. Help me.
I think it could be a little higher. I think the influence that Joni's had, and I think with Joni, her popularity increasing again since this version, like now we're coming, I can't believe it. It's right. 3.5 years since this version of the list came out. Her population has increased again. So sure. I could see this even going up even more, these songs, you know. So I think 3 years ago I might have been okay with it, but now I'm saying I think a little higher. I think her influence, her influence for young artists, especially female artists, I think is only going to increase right now.
I like it. At least one higher. I haven't used that line in a while.
So yeah, at least one. No, but at least one. Probably a few at this point. I guess the last thing is, you know, we've talked about the albums. So Blue, we did 3, and Court and Spark, we see has moved up a few spots. And then 2, we've got 2 more albums, and they're new. 1976's Hejira is at number 133, and 1975's, which I think comes out just after this album, is 258, The Hissing of the Summer Lawns. Do you have that?
I've often wondered what that one's like.
I'm curious about
that. Kind of expensive, because all of Joni's vinyl is expensive, but must not be as popular as some of her other ones, because it's often there in the Joni Mitchell slot. It'll be interesting to tackle that. And hey, now it's on Spotify again. I can actually go and give it a good listen before I make my choice on whether to add it to the vinyl collection.
Well, Ben, we did it, and it didn't take us nearly as long as the last.
No surprise, Blue did touch us in a way that which really is quite expected. I don't think so.
Oh yeah, it was so incredible. But that's it. So next week, of course, we'll do our re-rank. It's taken us a while to get through this group of 10, because we've had taken some breaks and just had some busyness in our personal schedules. So next week we're going to review our last 10 albums and kind of talk about them briefly and re-rank them how we would. And then we'll come back after that with a new review.
Are we sure if we're going to jump right to 111 right away or take a bit more time or go back and we still have that one album that we need to visit from the 2023 list. Beyonce's Renaissance album we've got to go back and do, which is now at number 71. But at some point, we are absolutely certain that we will eventually get to number 111, which is Control by Janet Jackson. So whenever that time comes, we'll get to it.
Cool. We've done Michael, but we haven't done Janet yet. So we'll
That's true. Yeah.
Get into that. Well, that's great. Thanks, Ben, again, for sharing this time with me. And until next time. We hope you all continue to be well. We hope you take care of yourselves and those close to you. And of course, we hope you'll join us again right here on SoundLogic Podcast.
Let's go.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and take care. If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.